Welcome to the Local Marketing Trends Podcast, where you'll find unique insights on what's happening in the ever-changing world of local marketing from two of the industry's brightest analysts and forecasters, Corey Elliott and Gordon Burrell. Today's podcast is sponsored by iPublish Media Solutions, the leader in self-service advertising, and by Vivo, bringing local spot buying to music television. And now, here are your hosts, Gordon and Corey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Local Marketing Trends Podcast. I am Corey Elliott, and with me, as always, I have Mr. Gordon Burrell.
Hey, Corey. It's toward the end of the year, and we're winding down. I think we have one more after this.
Okay. Yeah, we do. But before you get off on a tangent, I want to get right to this interview. This is a great interview.
The interview with Don Graham.
With Don Graham, chairman of Graham Holdings. It's one of our longer ones, but it's packed with information. And I'd rather talk on the back end of it rather than the front end. So let's get right to that interview.
All right. Well, let's cut to that, and then we'll come back afterwards. Our guest today is Donald Graham. He's the majority owner and chairman of Graham Holdings, a $2.8 billion company that has holdings in educational, healthcare, manufacturing, as well as interest in the publishing, broadcasting, and marketing industries. You probably know them as owners of the online magazine Slate. They also own a digital marketing company called Social Code, which recently changed its name to Code 3, and of course, Graham Media Group. And their local TV stations, which I'm proud to say are clients of ours at Burrell. But of course, he's probably best known for his affiliation with the Washington Post, which was in his family for 8 decades. So, Don, welcome to the show.
Gordon, thanks so much. It's good being with you. And you outlined much of my career very nicely. One thing I'd like to make sure your viewers understand, when our company was then called the Washington Post Company. When we sold the Washington Post newspaper, we did not sell it to Amazon. We sold it to Jeff personally. So Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. Amazon has no ownership role, and he keeps the two interests quite separate. That's important to the reporters working on the paper who cover Amazon quite aggressively and are willing to write things that are less than pleasant about them.
Thank you. And good point. I could have introduced you, Don, as a Vietnam War vet, a college newspaper editor, and a former policeman.
Yeah, literally 50 years ago, I was a D.C. police officer for a year and a half. I went through the police academy and then had a scout car beat in Northeast Washington. And that was fascinating. That was some education.
That is an entire another podcast interview. Yeah. So Don, let's start out by having you tell us a bit about Graham Media, the TV group.
Well, I absolutely love Graham Media. It's when my grandfather Eugene Meyer bought something called the Washington Post in 1933, but it wasn't the Washington Post as people think of it. It was a bankrupt newspaper. He bought it at a bankruptcy sale. They couldn't pay the newsprint bill. And he paid $825,000 at an auction on the steps of the Washington Post building and took over a business. My grandfather was a successful financier. He had never run a business and never worked on a newspaper. And he was 57 years old. So this was a brave thing for him to do. But he lost money on that paper. He thought he could break it even in 3 years. It took him 21 years of losing money that he had to pay out of his pocket. He didn't own another business until 1948 or 9, when we went into the broadcast business. And my father, Phil Graham, who was then the CEO of the company, didn't have that title, but that's what he was. He first bought WJXT in Jacksonville, paying a then record price for a television station of $750,000, and then first bought half of and then bought all of the CBS affiliate in Washington. Those two stations made money from the outset, and that enabled the company to fund the losses of the Washington Post until it started making money in the mid-50s. We've got a great CEO of Great Graham Media Group in Emily Barr, who is priceless, who's the best executive in the broadcast
industry. Is best executive in the broadcast industry. I would agree with that. I wanted to get to what happened, I guess, 6 years ago that led to the decision to end 8 decades of ownership in the Washington Post and turn it over to Jeff Bezos.
Well, it's a pretty straightforward story, Gordon. There were two Graham family members in the company at that time. Myself, I was chairman and CEO of the holding company, then called the Washington Post Company. And my niece, Catherine Weymouth, a very astute manager, younger generation manager, who had grown up in digital. Catherine was a lawyer, but had gone as the lawyer to our digital company, Washington Post Newsweek Interactive. And so she had written all the contracts, gotten deep into it, and then moved over, not to the more glamorous news side of the Post, but to the not very glamorous advertising side, where she was a spectacular leader. She first led our Help Wanted advertising business, and then became vice president of advertising of the Washington Post, which is a big, responsible job. When Bo Jones, the publisher of the Post, moved up to help me in corporate, Catherine became the publisher of the Post. After 5 years, she came to me the end of 2012 and said, "Don, since I became publisher, I've had to lay off 100 people a year that we shouldn't be laying off because revenue's going down. And as I look ahead in the next 5 years, I don't see any reason to think it's going to be different. And the reason is that we don't have the technology brilliance and depth to compete with the people offering the greatest digital news products." And said Catherine to me, "While this is heretical, I think we ought to consider whether there might be another owner who could bring something to the Post that's greater than what we can." Well, she and I had a couple of days of very long talks before we talked to anybody else about it. The first person I called about it was our then 22% shareholder, Warren Buffett. And Warren ratified our thinking. We then talked to the rest of our board of directors one at a time and slowly. And there wasn't a decision to sell the paper. There was a decision to explore and see if anyone could bring resources to the paper that our small company couldn't. The obvious screaming resource was sophisticated technology understanding. And Jeff wasn't the only potential buyer we talked to. But if I had lined up all 300 million people in the country and ranked them as prospective owners of the Post, Jeff probably would have been first. Why? He had been thinking about the internet nonstop for 15 years. He was a reader. He had used the internet to sell books and create print products. He knew a tremendous amount about reading habits from Amazon and from Kindle, which people tend to forget about, but that is a very effective reading device. I'd had a funny experience, Gordon. I'd been on the board of Facebook starting in 2009, ending in 2015. Watching over Mark Zuckerberg's shoulder and over the shoulders of the people building Facebook, I realized what a technologically sophisticated company looked like. I thought a lot about our newspaper in that context, and Catherine and I had great people running our technology, so good that the person she had recently hired, Shailesh Prakash, is still there. In other words, he was a good enough technology person that Jeff Bezos, after interviewing him, said to me and Catherine, "He's as good as the people at Amazon." But Jeff reinforced Shailesh aided his recruiting efforts, connected him with consultants, so that when the sale was completed, it worked. I'm not going to say every aspect of it worked just as I'd imagined. In some ways, it worked better than I'd imagined. But the paper got a lot. The internet products, which are the future of the newspaper, got dramatically better very fast.
You also mentioned, I think, Don, in an interview with Gwen Lifer from PBS NewsHour 6 years ago, when just before this when the sale was in the process, something of a basis. You said he didn't walk in the door with solutions. Why was that important?
Well, Jeff Bezos is a very, very unusual man. I was very impressed. In the year we were starting to think about selling it, I heard Warren Buffett say to a business group spontaneously, "I think Jeff Bezos is the best CEO in the United States." And I was quite surprised by that, because Warren, Berkshire Hathaway, didn't at that time own one share of Amazon stock, which is usually the way Warren expressed his admiration for a CEO. But he never thought Amazon had been at a cheap enough price that he wanted the stock. But that was his opinion of Jeff. And here's what's unusual, Gordon. Very sophisticated business people, a famous real estate executive named Sam Zell from Chicago, with great depth of experience in business, bought the Chicago Tribune Company and very quickly came to wish he hadn't done it. Zell knew a lot about business and tended to look at the newspaper people as people who didn't know much, people who were small-time players. He had ideas. He was frustrated that he couldn't get the response he wanted to his ideas. And he made dramatic changes, some of which may have been well justified, but some of which didn't work out at all, and which drove away some of the very people he needed to run the paper. There was a tendency among people who came from another really big business to jump in, grab the steering wheel, and take control. Jeff didn't do that. Now, think about buying the Washington Post. You could do it for social cachet. You could do it to get invited to a White House dinner. Jeff Bezos didn't need the Washington Post to get invited to a White House dinner if he wanted. You could do it to, and one thing Jeff and I explored in advance was he doing it to push or promote certain political ideas? Because I told him, if you're doing it even 5% for such a reason, save your money. Don't do it, because it'll blow up in your face.
Don, I want to get to your thoughts on the future of local newspapers, and especially whether local TV stations may be facing the same technological challenges as newspapers did a decade ago. But first, we need to take a commercial break, so we'll be back right after this.
Want audience reach that can rival local TV but maintain the targeting and addressability of a premium digital partner? Vevo is the world's largest all-premium music video provider, starring the world's biggest celebrities. Vevo provides advertisers access to 149 million Americans a month, with 61 million of those viewers exclusively on connected TV screens, all in a brand-safe environment. Contact us at Vevo and bring local spot buying to music television, whether it's at DMA, state, or zip code level targeting. Just visit Vevo.com. That's V-E-V-O.com.
iPublish Media Solutions is the leader in self-service advertising, offering solutions for obituaries, real estate, legal notices, and other advertising categories. iPublish works with hundreds of media companies, helping them to acquire new advertisers and generating millions in ad revenue every year. From real estate agents to SMBs to private party advertisers, iPublish can help you sell highly profitable campaigns to large, mid-size, and even the smallest advertisers. Visit iPublishMedia.com for details.
Let's talk about the lessons learned over those past 6 years. I'm going to ask you your personal reading habit. Has anything changed about that? You know, are you reading it differently? Is there anything that you've really noticed that's different in those ensuing 6 years since you sold it to Bezos?
Let's start with a print paper, which I still subscribe to and read almost every day. Not when I'm on the road, obviously. The Washington Post in print unlike the New York Times and Wall Street Journal in print, is not much sold outside Washington, Maryland, and Virginia. In print, there is very little difference. The paper is still great. The paper is still deep. It's organized in a very sophisticated way. I love to read it. So do most readers. But when I'm on the road or during the course of a day, if a news story is breaking, I will either look online or read it on Kindle, which is, again, when I'm on the road, I tend to read the paper on Kindle because I can read the entire paper that way as I could with the print edition. But let's talk for the moment about the website, WashingtonPost.com, which is the primary revenue driver now. Money coming in from subscriptions to WashingtonPost.com, I'm sure, are a big part of the Washington Post's revenue. And when I said the Washington Post technology improved under Jeff right away, one thing I noticed immediately was that Jeff put an enormous emphasis on loading times, that if you loaded the Post on your iPhone or on your laptop, it loaded instantly, like lickety-split. It quickly came to load much faster than other news sites. And I remembered that Mark Zuckerberg had insisted on reporting to the board what the loading time for the Facebook page was in every continent in the world. The board didn't have that much interest in it, but he wanted his engineers to know that he was talking about that in board meetings so that they would focus on that number. Jeff focused on that number. The paper, the website came to look much better. The display of photographs, the emphasis on video, and the emphasis on original content on the internet that wasn't necessarily part of the print paper.
So it seems to be the user experience, I think, is something you could say improved tremendously.
Those are the right words.
And the Post, I think, is at about 3 million digital subscriptions, which is about half of where the New York Times is. But that's still a phenomenal number. So here's the tough question. I'm sure other publishers in the industry have asked you this. The Post is a different animal, as is the New York Times. It's a little more national. It's certainly political. It's not as geographic as your typical local newspaper. What do you think the future is of local newspapers? So many are owned by investors and not entrepreneurs, anything near like Bezos. And many are deeply, deeply in debt. Do you think there's a path for them based on what you've seen Bezos do with the Post and perhaps some sort of parallel to what you've that he's been able to accomplish at the Post?
I have long since ceased to be in the local news business. We sold the paper to Jeff in 2013, so I am no longer. I don't go to conventions of newspaper people. I don't talk to newspaper publishers. I'm not conversant with what's going on in the last 7 years. But Gordon, I agree with your analysis. The local newspaper has a very tough path. I think good newspapers with a strong readership and some willingness on the part of their subscribers to pay for their content have gotten to the point where they can break even. I haven't heard a lot saying what the Washington Post says, we're profitable. By the way, I should emphasize, since 2013, I have never asked anybody at the Washington Post, how are you doing? How's revenue? How's advertising? Because I'm afraid they'd tell me, and it's none of my business. I do not have any inside information on how the Post, either the newsroom or the business side, is working. I have only the insights of a reader. I talk to my old friends there from time to time, but not to get. So, but to you, back to your question, I think that the struggles of local newspapers are a big problem, not only for local newspapers, but for the United States of America. How is your local government doing? Is the mayor doing their job? Is the school system educating students the way parents want them to? Who's the superintendent of schools? What's he done? What policies is he following? How are our schools going to change? Are they going to build that road? And if so, where's the intersection going to go? These are classic questions that every local newspaper in the country would set about telling their readers. And just as you said, Gordon, a lot of these local newspapers no longer have the reporting staff they did, don't really have enough reporters to dig into those tough questions. And that's going to create a gap. It's, you know, I tend to think of the paper that goes after a crooked sheriff and puts him in jail. But there's a lot more day-to-day reporting. What's going to happen to local taxes?
So if you think maybe advertisers might not support the cost structure of delivering their messages in print anymore, and maybe the online version of the newspaper can't continue to support newspaper, the costliness of a newsroom, what about philanthropy? Do you think that is the answer, or community support like, you know, public broadcasting, for instance?
I think your analogy is very good. There is a local entrepreneur who lives in Washington named Elizabeth Green, who runs an education a newspaper called Chalkbeat, which is a national education daily with local sites where she can get philanthropic funding for them. She believes the future model for newspapers is a third of the money coming from advertising, a third from readers, and a third from philanthropy, which is quite like the model of the local NPR station.
Excellent. One last question for you. This is a tough one. The same challenging conditions that face newspapers, as we've discussed, seem to be facing local broadcasters, particularly TV. Are there parallels, do you think, Don, with newspapers that might make it advisable for the broadcast industry to strengthen alliances with, say, Silicon Valley entrepreneurs? Or is TV fundamentally different than newspapers?
Well, TV faces some of the same challenges, but far from all. And I'll give you a quick story to illustrate the difference. In the vividly remembered year 2008, when the company's financial structure started to fall apart, the revenue of both the Washington Post newspaper and our television stations went down by exactly the same percentage, 22%. Why? People weren't buying cars, people weren't buying homes, people weren't buying as much in the stores, and a lot of our major advertisers in both media were going bankrupt, were going out of business. It's pretty tough to get advertising from somebody who isn't there anymore. In 2009, 10, 11, the newspaper didn't come back at all to speak of. It might have grown by 2% in a good year. The television stations came all the way back quickly. An illustration of the power of those TV ads for those who were sophisticated in using them, auto dealers, auto dealer groups, and longtime TV advertisers. The audience for TV stayed very strong. In the year 2020, newspapers have had, local television, not newspapers, have had a bonanza from political advertising, mm-hmm. and that's making everybody feel really good right now. Yeah. But long-term, local television has to continue to work on its audience to grow it in the very difficult younger demographic. And one way they can do that, which Graham Media is investing in heavily, is becoming the number one local news provider. Most of our sites, most of our websites at our television stations are number one in their market, not only among television stations, most of them are bigger than the site of the local newspaper. So that is part of what we want to do. We want to be, when people think about local news, we want them to think about our television station and turn there first.
Yep. And it's probably the last mass medium there is, and probably the best branding medium for advertisers. So Don, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. And I really, really appreciate it. And I'm sure the industry does as well.
Gordon, thanks a million. It was fun to be with you on the podcast.
See what I mean? That was a great interview. There's a lot of stuff in there. It was great to hear from Don. Wow.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to that right away. That was a terrific interview. You know, Corey, he was the second most difficult interview that we've had to edit. We have to edit some of these. The first one was due to an interviewee who will go unnamed, who spoke in very long tangents. But this one was difficult because the content was just fantastic.
Yeah.
It was just really good. What'd you hear? What were the big things?
Well, one of the things, and I'll jump around here, but I really like what he said about an opportunity for local newspaper companies, which is something that I didn't see really developed anywhere. Maybe you have. And that is being the political expert in a market, especially during this time, you know, hosting debates and talks and being the expert, the go-to expert in a market. I think that would be a very good opportunity.
Yeah, there's some that do that, but you know, not many. So if you take a page from the Washington Post and say, yeah, how can we do that? How can we cultivate this growing interest in politics, not particularly nationally, but probably locally, where there's a very strong niche, particularly in capital markets like Raleigh, North Carolina, with the News and Observer, and Richmond with the Times-Dispatch.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a great opportunity. It's off this wave of political interest that we've all developed over the last 4 years.
Yeah, you know what I heard was load time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was just that one little thing that made me stop and think. It is all about the user experience. If Zuckerberg and if Bezos are talking to their boards about load time and the minutiae of nanoseconds that they're able to improve load time, they're really focused on that consumer experience. It's that buy now button on Amazon where you click it and it doesn't say, are you sure? Please enter your credit card number. You know, cancel your order at any time. No, it's like, okay, done. It's coming this, you know, on such and such a day. It's coming in 2 days. And by the way, if you need to cancel it, you can click here.
Yeah, it's just seamless. It's a seamless customer interaction. Another thing that he brought up that I was so happy when he was describing Bezos coming in. Bezos came in and he said he didn't change anything right away. He just came in and observed and figured out how things ran. And I got to tell you, Gordon, one of my pet peeves, and you know I have a lot of them, but one of my pet peeves is anybody who comes into a room and then stands up and introduces themselves as a change agent. Because the first thing I think of when somebody says, I'm a change agent, I think, oh, you mean you're an asshole.
Okay.
Because, no, let me explain
it's
that.
It's a little
because,
harsh. But.
Well, it's because it's not, it's the difference between intelligence and wisdom. I can come in being very intelligent, but the people who are in that industry right there sitting in that room have the wisdom. They know what worked, what didn't work, and I can build on that. But just to come in and say, I'm a change agent, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a lot of great points in there. I hope everyone enjoyed the interview and is poised for a great 2021. Maybe take some of those points of wisdom and apply them to your company's television. You know, it just seems like there's a lot of opportunity for TV, and they may not be as stressed as newspapers have been going into 2021, when there won't be as much political advertising. And when a lot of people are, in fact, streaming, local broadcast TV, as Don said, may still be pretty strong going into the new year.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, thank you, Corey. And thanks, everybody. I think we might do one more podcast before the end of the year. So until then, hope everybody has happy and safe and certainly healthy holidays.
You've been listening to the Local Marketing Trends Podcast, sponsored by iPublish Media and Vivo. If you have submissions you'd like Corey and Gordon to discuss, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, email the hosts at podcasts@BorrellAssociates.com and let them know. Thanks for listening. And remember, market well.